Marigo Raftopoulos, welcome. Thanks for being my guest.
My pleasure, Daryl. Thank you for having me.
It's great. So you were at Gathering 11. What attracted you to the event?
I think it was the organisers were just amazing and really sort of passionate about what they believed in, and I'm attracted to sort of other people's sort of passions and belief in something, and David's vision of what he wanted to create. It was more to create a gathering of like-minded people who want to actually make positive change in the world. So I love the passion, I love the belief, and with the vibe that was being created, the conversations that had started, it started this groundswell that you felt like you needed to be a part of that, because there were like-minded people there who believed in a better way that we can actually organize our communities, our societies and our businesses to make a positive impact on society.
Yeah, so that positive change angle, I suspect that there's something in that for you. That's where your work lies and what you're trying to do?
Absolutely. It's just with the whole sort of using game dynamics, game design, gamification elements, all that is about changing the way we perceive each other. We don't look at each other as part of a hierarchy, a part of the command control system. It's about all of us working together, having fun, enjoying ourselves, going on an epic mission and sort of co-creating a nice space that we all belong to, that we all have a role to play. And I think the way we currently organize ourselves, it tends to be a little bit alienating and exclusive, whereas game technology, game dynamics, gameplay is all about inclusion and everyone having a sort of a positive and constructive role to play.
So I'm wondering how your experience in a gathering reflected the, as you're saying, the whole gamification is about involvement and having fun and going on a journey together. How did the event mirror that sort of process?
Yeah, very much so, and they didn't do it consciously. Having the introductory session that we spent a lot of time initially getting to know each other, and there were a lot of very game-like or playful elements in that, introducing a bit of fun, introducing a bit of get-to-know-you techniques and things like that to actually sort of get everyone together to laugh, to share stories, to find the common ground, just to see what it is that we're interested in, what it is that we want to do. And those very playful sessions, everyone came out believing that, wow, you know, I have more in common with all these people than I have differences, and that is a good basis to start moving forward and trying to sort of come to some kind of understanding of the world that we live in and our role in it and what it is that we can do together, and bring our own individual components to it as well. We're all very good at certain things, and you share that in a sort of collaborative environment, and you sort of connect with people who've got strengths in different areas that sort of create that sort of synergy. So all the game-like elements brought out all those things, and also getting together and answering little questions and little assignments and things like that. That's all very game-like elements, going on a sort of a quest and doing little missions along the way.
So you're saying that helped reinforce that real sense of community at the event and to then sort of lead that through the whole event?
Yes, absolutely. Because if you find traditional events, they would have a more of a talk fest. You would have a big audience and you have all your speakers one after the other present what it is that they think, what they believe in, and then you've got the opportunity to just to network over coffee and other sessions like that. Whereas what this does is you're networking constantly. You're introducing yourself to people through the different activities that they had and the actual assignments that they set, you know, having a little problem to solve, and we get together with groups and we change the composition of those groups the whole time. So it's you're sort of connecting with different people on different problems, and you find you sort of come to this sort of groundswell of opinion of what it is that we're looking at, what are the key challenges that our communities are facing, and what is your role in that.
So there were themes that emerged, do you think, from those sort of events? Is that what you sensed, patterns from those individual sort of connections? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of those patterns revolved around change, changing how we personally perceive ourselves, to not sort of perceive that we have limitations, that we actually have strengths and we have opportunities to change not only those things within ourselves, but also with our friends, their family, and the people around us. So it's looking at basically, you know, what are our strengths and what is it that we can actually do in a very constructive, and it doesn't have to be massive change. It's those little changes, what is within our control, what is within our power and influence to actually start introducing those changes, rather than sort of say, sit back, we're going to wait for government or some other organisation to do it. It was very empowering to the individual. And I think the themes of change, of empowerment and of questioning, not sort of, not necessarily having the answers, but just asking the right questions of the right people to actually bring everyone together.
Well, that's pretty profound, isn't it? Given, particularly, I think, given the amount of negativity around some of the big issues in society at the moment, to sort of hear that people are, you know, positive about things and engaged and really, I guess that's what's attracted me to some of the people and the, you know, doing something for this event. It is very positive. It is forward looking and. Yeah, thinking that we have the ability to change and we can make changes.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with the amount of negativity that sometimes we hear on the news and our societies and our communities around us. But a lot of that negativity makes you feel disempowered. That for example, climate change and the way that the politicians and the press are talking about that. You're looking at very powerful organisations that have heavily vested interests in the status quo.
Yeah.
So their job is to actually make the community feel disempowered in doing anything about that because they don't want that change.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to say is that actually all that is nonsense, that people, maybe some organisations want you to believe that you're disempowered and there's nothing you can do about it so they can continue with the status quo. But what our communities now, such as sort of the gathering community, is saying, actually that's not the case. We are empowered. The status quo is not good enough because we're not going to leave very much for our children if we continue this way. And actually we are empowered, and this is the way in which we are empowered, and this is the way we can sort of move forward together and make those positive changes.
Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Marigo, you mentioned empowerment too, and I know that you did a lightning talk on engagement and innovation. Could you sort of link what you talked about in that YouTube video to what you're talking about now in terms of engagement?
Because what engagement, my whole angle with game dynamics and gamification is that within a game, every game is designed around empowering the individual to be their absolute best. Now, that is the foremost objective of a game designer is around engagement, because if you don't engage your players, they won't play your game and it makes you a pretty lousy game designer. Mm. So engagement is at the forefront, whereas in our communities and our schools and our work, it's not so much about engagement but about obedience. It's about fitting within a command control structure. Mm-hmm. It's about doing what is expected of you, and this is our, you know, sort of 10-year strategic plan, you know, and our vision and mission, you know, all that has sort of become much bigger than the individual. It's like you leave yourself at the door because you're meant to be swept up in this huge movement that is work or school, etc. But if you redesign those objectives, be it school or a business, to say, no, you are engaged, you are empowered to actually do what it is that you're good at within that system. So if we need innovation in our society, we need to actually empower more individuals to do their own thing, to be who they are, to see what it is, to express what it is that they see and what they experience, because everyone is unique, everyone knows something, and if they all bring that to the table within a collaborative environment and they feel they have permission to do that, that they're empowered to do that, then there are a lot more ideas that will come out. There's a lot more thinking capacity and that brain power that's out there that we're not tapping into because we haven't gone to the, you know, and it's not really sort of going to a lot of extra effort. It's just about thinking differently, saying that if you are empowered to do and be who it is that you are, to come to this situation and try and solve these problems, you're going to have a lot more of a creative and innovative environment. And given the challenges that we're facing in society, we need all hands on deck for everyone to be creative and innovative about what bringing those ideas to the table so we can actually make those changes.
Yeah, it's a great challenge. It's also a real contrast to, I think that links perfectly with what we were just talking about in terms of the status quo and the way that if we rely on someone else to fix the problems, i.e. government or business, that's really not thinking differently. It's just devolving our power to someone else. It's not engaging. It's not innovative. And it's not going to solve any problems. So these sort of conversations, that are starting at gathering, to me are a profound way of, or the only way things can really change from that perspective.
Exactly. We're creating that groundswell. So if replicate gathering in every community, in every society, in every nation, that groundswell will just really start to pick up momentum. And because it's a very positive, people are naturally attracted to very positive movements, very positive, empowering movements like gathering. And that creating that groundswell is the only way that can be done. Even if a government, say, one day decided, I'm going to make our society very creative and innovative, they wouldn't be able to do it top-down anyway. So this is the only way that it can happen, the bottom-up movements such as gathering.
Yeah. So were there any other learnings that you sort of got from the conference? Anything else you learnt or was thought-provoking during your time?
Yeah, I think it was what I sort of learned was also that everyone has really amazing positive intentions and really goodwill to actually move forward. But I found that right at the end, we put together the asset map. Like we all had to write on our little sticky notes, what are our skills? What is it that we're willing about us? What is it about ourselves, our strengths, our capabilities that we're willing to share? And it was actually quite a very moving and overwhelming experience because all those sticky notes went up on these big boards and they were all sort of out in that gorgeous courtyard and were sort of wandering around looking at this amazing sea of capabilities and goodwill that we were all offering to each other to move forward. And at that point I thought, wow, it is actually not that easy to actually implement change. And it's a lot of with anything that we do in life, it's the actual implementation part that's difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, what sort of confirmed in my mind, as it is in anything else that we do, like for example, it's like to develop a game, it's only 10% design and 90% iteration. And I think that 90%, the iteration is part of the implementation, the experimentation to see what will work, what doesn't, which bits fit together, how do we sort of change and how do we, reallocate or reorganize our assets so they're allocated in the right areas. And I think that for me came out as like the biggest challenge, that the goodwill is amazing and it's really important, but how do we actually work this together? And I think that's going to be our biggest challenge moving forward.
Yeah. So how do we harness that energy from that's created in that situation in workshops? I think my experience as a workshop facilitator is very similar in that there's a lot of momentum and energy around a particular point, around an event or around, something. But, one of the real challenges is empowering people to take on and do stuff afterwards, to go back and implement things. And I guess it's similar in a training environment too, where people sort of, learn new skills, but the real challenge is putting them into practice and using them.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that is because still in the deep recesses of our minds that we've been weaned on the command control structures of our society, that there is a leader at the top and it's a triangle and we're all down the bottom. And I think and we're not conscious of it. I think we default to some kind of view that, someone will organize it. Someone will be a leader. Someone will come in and sort of thousands of items on our asset map. Someone's going to come in and harness all that together. So I think it's we have to evolve out of those mental models to actually sort of truly understand what it means to be empowered and to take that action as well. So it's just an indication that change is hard. It takes a long time. We're very lucky that we have this amazing positive groundswell of goodwill. But it's changing how we actually naturally default to some kind of mystical leader that's going to come in and save us. So I think it's just getting out of that mindset, and we, you know, we're on this huge learning journey, and I think, you know, the destination is probably right there. It's here. It's amongst us. But it's trying to understand, you know, how we. The change comes from within, and I think that's going to be the hardest part. How do we know when it's okay to be a leader and not to sort of wait for someone else to do it for us?
What do you? I mean, I agree, and some of my own sort of practice, creative practice, if you like, is I realize as I get older that you learn from I learn anyway from doing things. So it's this constant sort of. You know, paradox of doing stuff versus thinking about stuff. And I guess this is relevant to this in terms of, yeah, how do we get out of that model of sort of hanging back and not doing things and creating stuff rather than creating stuff and doing stuff with intention as opposed to sort of waiting for someone to do it or not doing it for X reason and Y reason.
Yeah, and Darryl, you've hit the nail on the head with the actual doing things, getting up. Thinking and talking about it to actually doing stuff. I think the most empowering thing that we can do is to do stuff, but act in small ways. So, and I think doing things in small ways, like within the home or within the community, starts to build that sense of empowerment as well. It's like, well, that was a small project. It was at my local school. We organised, having a sort of a much, sort of minimising our carbon, the school's carbon footprint. So you get community. It's a smallish project. But that will actually make a difference. And what that experience comes back to people and they say, wow, okay, that gives them confidence. It gives an information base of what worked and what didn't. And then the next step will be a region or a whole community. So it starts to build up from that. So the importance of encouraging local action because they're more like that. That's like an experimental ground. It's where you do your learning. It's where you gain confidence and where we learn from each other and give ourselves those experiences that just grow in momentum and become larger projects.
Yeah, that when you were talking then, it reminded me, I've done quite a bit of martial arts, and it's very similar in terms of the positive reinforcement. And it's one of the reasons they have a grading system is not to say, oh, you're at this level or you've got this qualification, but it's to build that confidence in people. So you've reached the level of confidence, really, by reaching the next belt level. You've reached the level of confidence in your own ability rather than you have reached this stage, you've got a diploma in this or a this in that. It really is about creating body memory. So it's about doing stuff and then through repetition, building confidence and getting intuitive as you go. So the further, the more you do stuff, the more confident you are and the more it comes naturally.
Oh, that's an excellent example, Darryl. And I think with martial arts, I mean, it evolved over thousands of years. Yeah. They really understand the human psyche and they've really got it down to a fine art.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. It's funny that you call it an art because that's why they call it martial arts, I suppose.
Absolutely, absolutely. I karate for several years too, so I totally respect that, the leveling system. In fact, leveling system within martial arts is not too dissimilar to what happens in games as well.
Yeah, very very interesting link. Yeah, so again, is that about building the sort of positive reinforcement throughout the game that people get a sense of achievement and that they're on the right path or...
Yeah, absolutely. So you start small, start with your first layers and gives you experience through that repetition as well. And, it moves with your level of capability. So it's not to say within 12 months or within 6 months, this is where you need to be. You level according to your level of ability. So it's, it keeps pace with you. It doesn't have an artificial time horizon or anything like that at all, as do martial arts. When you're ready, you will evolve, like your sensei in martial arts knows when you're ready to move on, or within a game, you know, the AI or how the leveling system has been designed, it automatically takes you up to that next level. So it's about building that intelligence, building those skills and building those confidence. And when you're ready to move up, that's when you do. And the challenges get more or harder or more challenging, more interesting, more compelling. And it just taps into different parts of your psyche and your motivations to achieve. So, yeah, awesome stuff.
Speaking of motivation, how do you think we can encourage others to, you know, we were talking about change is difficult. How do you encourage others to sort of take these baby steps and to try small things and to do things as opposed to sort of waiting for someone else to do them?
Well, I think it's just being inclusive, including people in your projects. It's like, you know, you have a great idea for a project and you know that, you know, other people would be interested or involved. So include them in your projects and encourage them to develop their own as well. So it's sharing the love, basically. Yeah. It's sort of saying, you know, share what it is that you're doing. And by that, by being with you or experiencing that, it gives them a sense of, well, I can do that too. It actually taps into their own passions and their own interests as well. And a lot of the time we just need a bit of encouragement. We need a bit of confidence and sometimes just to show us the way for a little bit until we can sort of do it ourselves.
Yeah, that's. I think that's good advice. I've been hanging around with some friends that have got a couple of startups, and it certainly influenced my thinking in the last couple of months in terms of, you know, what they're doing and what, you know, I've sort of looking at doing. So yeah, I think you're very right.
Yeah, because I do a lot of work with startups. Well, and you know, like you know, people often ask me, you know, you work with corporates and government. What are you interested in startups for? And I often say, well, it's the same reason that physicists are interested in the origins of the universe, because right at the beginning of time, and also as in the beginning of a new business or a new organization, there's that sense of excitement. Yeah. The agile environment, that the sense of sharing and getting as many ideas and different, you know, particles as possible to bring it into that little ecosystem that is a startup. It's a very dynamic, very open, very very creative, yeah, space. And I think I love those environments because it just shows you that what we can do with any idea that comes up. You know, you can do anything with any idea as long as you've got the passion and the drive to actually act on it. You can do amazing things. And this is what I love about working with startups and the people that are involved in it, is that their passion and their excitement and their you know, their ability to actually get things done fairly quickly and not worry about what has or hasn't been done before. That they just sort of, and they're very agile as well, so they don't sort of get, you know, bogged down with how things currently are. They know how to work around existing obstacles. So it's a very exciting space and lots that we can learn from it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the other one that I find too is that willingness to fail, you know, the willingness to sort of do stuff and it just go nowhere, or, you know, go to the wall, but to sort of pick yourself up and keep going with the bigger vision.
Oh, exactly. And also that big of us, I was in San Francisco earlier this year, and they use the term pivot a lot amongst the startups. So they start off saying, knowing that they have an idea, but they're going to pivot if they need to. So which means they can change their idea, they can change the view, they can change the complete direction and think that that's perfectly okay. Mm. Whereas, you know, sometimes that you find that, you know, if you have an idea or an objective and it almost is frowned upon if you're going to change that, because you said you were going to do this and you know, did not do it or changed it. But what startups are saying to us is that you need to pivot, you need to change direction if the environment says you need to do it.
Yeah, it's that sort of sailing analogy of tack, what is it? Yeah, sort of trimming the sails to where the wind's going,
yes,
as opposed to going, I'm going in that direction over there and trying to go in a straight line, yes, despite there being no wind.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, game designers say that about the creative design process when they're pulling together a game. They always say that when they're designing a game, it's a very emergent space, and their biggest advice is to let the game emerge, let the game tell you where it wants to go.
Yeah.
Now, that is just so, it's, you know, like it's quite almost spooky, because what you're doing when you're creating something, even if it just starts with an idea, it develops a life of its own, and you need to follow that. And you need to, if you breathe life into something, it has its own will. And then you just sort of follow that, and you're sort of you're guiding that rather than sort of sculpting it. So you're letting it evolve rather than sort of thinking that you need to do bricks and mortar around it. It's not that at all. It's like you're almost a free spirit, and you just let it evolve into something that it needs to be.
Yeah. So basically, you're creating your own story. You're creating your own narrative, as opposed to sort of having one already made for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. So I'm just wondering, you know, the other sort of interesting thing for me around the event is the relationships that seem to have emerged and come out of them. I was just wondering, did you make any new connections and from the event, and what's coming from those connections that you made?
Made lots of connections with our overseas guests that came, and a lot of people that were probably in my orbit, but I hadn't really met. This is what I love about technology, that there was an ambient awareness of a lot of people that were there, that I knew of them via sort of Twitter or connections that, you know, other people had, and others that were completely new that, you know, weren't connected to, say, the social networks that we've sort of been sort of hanging about in, and actually putting those names to Twitter handles and having those conversations and connecting on different levels. I've caught up with many people since then, you know, lots of coffees and lots of conversation about, you know, what are our shared interests, and leaving it with a situation where let's talk more about this space. There were a few startups that were there that, you know, I've sort of spent some time sort of talking about what it is that they were doing and giving some suggestions, and then making more connections for people as well. So I've referred people to others that may help them in their journey or what it is that they're trying to create as well. So it's created ongoing conversations. No solid projects as yet, but I can feel that they're coming. It's like we know that there is something bigger amongst us. And what we're trying to do is just keep those conversations going, because that just sort of fuels the ideas and fuels the passions. And then when the ideas come together, I mean, that's the easy part. You know, that will happen. I think the important part is keeping the connections going and keeping that energy going between people, either face-to-face or with technology. Technology is brilliant, so it works both ways.
Yeah, I agree. I was just thinking the same thing. Sometimes these things take a while to sort of come to fruition. It's the same with projects. You know, you can work diligently for quite a while and you can make connections, but something, you know, doesn't quite come together. But there's this tension, I guess, between how long do I wait for it to emerge versus, you know, being proactive and making stuff happen. And then sometimes when you do that, though, it's premature.
Yes, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think letting this early stage is quite sort of in the creative stage, it's quite nebulous, that I think trusting the feeling, and this is where we need, as people, as humans, we tend to overanalyze situations. Or we tend to say, okay, sort of let's be logical, where is it going, what's it going to happen? You know, I think we need to just sort of ease up on that and just let our intuition take over.
Yeah, let's have a Gantt chart.
Yeah, oh, I know, my God.
Yeah.
Exactly right. So, you know, and where is the kill point if nothing happens of this relationship and all this stuff? I think we need to get out of that. That's very mechanistic thinking.
Yeah.
And we're in this amazing organic process at the moment, and we're all loving it. It's positive energy, and good things will come of that. I think it's unrealistic to put a time scale on it. I think there are some people that have went to gathering with ideas, and I think they're progressing with those in some form. And I think many of them have expressed slight changes in direction or changes in partnerships or people involved in it, which has been amazing.
Yeah.
But I think let's not be too quick with putting schedules around, you know, what's going to come out of it. I think what has come out of it is an amazing outcome, that the positive energies and those new connections that we've made, and it's only through those connections and that energy that positive things will come out.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess that leads on to, you know, the next question, which is, you know, where to from here? From your perspective, you know, what did you learn? We've understood what you've learned from the conference. What next for you, you know, from a conference perspective?
Yeah, I think for me, it's even though I knew that that the what our communities need is greater engagement through play and through game-like elements, it really hit home just how urgent that situation was, because people respond to it so beautifully. We're looking for something that's different and not so serious. I mean, it's, you know, serious is an odd word. It's sort of, you know, when you say serious, it makes everyone sort of recoil in horror, thinking, oh, I actually gonna have to sort of do something difficult that's sort of not exactly, you know, like interesting or have a positive outcome.
Yeah, it's quite a stern word, isn't it?
Like, very much so.
Now, let's be serious here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can solve these same problems through play and through game-like elements, because play and game-like makes it taps into all of our soul, all of our intuition, which is what we sort of need to work more with. And so for me, it's I feel like I'm on a huge campaign now to actually improve or to spread what I know about gamification, game dynamics, and share that with as many people as possible. So I've just sort of really been sort of, you know, I do a lot of research, both for my PhD and sort of what's sort of coming out in the press. I push a lot of stuff out through my blog, through Twitter, etc., to share as much as possible, because I think the more resources, the more we have a common understanding of what different tools are at our disposal, the more we will all use that, and we'll all sort of develop a much greater level of connection and understanding with each other. So through my personal mission is to actually spread the word and give out as many resources as possible as to how people can help themselves, help their communities, help their students, their businesses, their organisations by using these different tool sets.
Yeah. It sounds like that was really reinforced for you by Gathering 11. I know you were working in this area before and you are very passionate about it, but it sounds to me like this was a real sort of positive reinforcement of, yeah, I'm onto something here.
Absolutely, because, you know, no matter how, you know, because I had, like you said, very passionate, very strong belief in this, but just talking to that group and just seeing these faces, these the nodding and the yes, and that's like the encouragement. It was something completely different, you know, because I often address business groups who sit there with crossed arms thinking, what is it? What's the practical and all this stuff? And I forge on, you know, regardless. But seeing this group there, and it's like I felt like it sounds really corny, but it was like we're all levitating towards this. Yes, this is amazing. This can make a difference to all our lives. And it was a completely different feeling, and it's taken me to a different level of commitment.
Yeah. Fantastic. So you're more energized to convert the skeptics that you used to perhaps dealing, you know, having in the audience.
Probably not so much convert them, but love them in a different way.
That's probably a better way of putting it. But yeah, that's fantastic. So that's probably a wrap, I think.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Thank you for developing these podcasts, because I think it's really important to capture how we're feeling right now. Because at gatherings, a lot of positive energy, and we're still glowing about it. But making us think again about it, like, you know, a month later, 2 months later, 3 months later, a lot of things settle in our minds and move. And I think it's really important to capture how we are down the track and what more developments and thoughts and feelings and views have developed since then. So I think what you're doing is really important to capture the mood at different points in time, because, you know, things that didn't come up then are coming up now. Mm-hmm. And that's only because it is a journey, and things come up in the road further down the journey. And I think what you're doing is creating a different conversation about, you know, what has moved and how, and this gives us an indication of how we can move forward as well.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for the feedback. Certainly from my point of view, I'm a big believer in reflective learning. So that sort of action learning, yes. You know, do something, reflect on it, and then feed it back into that cycle. So, yeah, hopefully it does contribute to people reflecting and learning from that reflection and putting that into place in terms of where they move forward. And, yeah, that's my contribution, I guess, to the small changes and the small acts that are moving forward.
Wonderful. That's great, Daryl. Excellent.
Okay, Marigo Raftopoulos, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Marigo.